December 14, 2014,
it's the Watt from Pedro Show.
For Pedro Show, December 14, Sunday. 5 or 6 days, Brother Matt. I'm
356. Yeah, that's right. Countdown.
Countdown. Right. It's my last Sunday as a 56-year-old. We started the show off with John Coltrane's last gigs, him doing Crescent Temple University. I think it was November 11th, 1966. We got some guests.
Yeah, welcome.
Plowed up.
Word slingers from OC.
Behind the Orange County. Orange Curt.
Yeah.
Marvin Scott Marvin, poet man. I got to share stage with him, his buddy Kurt, his band Pork Chops Applesauce, and they brought him Wingman, cool. Wingnut.
That's Mark.
Mark?
Howdy.
So Pork Chops and Applesauce, do people automatically know that reference?
Well, actually, it's funny. Like, young kids, they think I'm talking about food. But old people,
Brady Bunch, right?
Older, yeah. You can see him try to make the face like they're getting ready to do the Humphrey Bogart, you know, impersonation. Yeah. Some people got it, and some people don't.
Yeah, there were things that they would have people do as the commercials come in, so it looked like they were talking on the talk shows. Usually it was peas and carrots. You just said peas and carrots. It made it look like your mouth was making something. So whatever, what was his name? Jack Parr. Peas and carrots, pork chops and applesauce. You know, it's like you're saying something that actually means. You know, when you put that on the table, you got to watch it because the mic. Bob Stock could learn.
Hey, Bob, thanks for the meat puppets, Steve.
Yeah, two more, right?
Yeah, I think.
The big search. I mean, he's got a pad this big to the roof that he's been climbing through. But he got one of them.
Yeah, he has a start. About 10 years.
It's a start.
Took 10 years.
Anyway, I invited Marvin Scott Marvin on because of his poetry. So before we get fucking doing anything, why don't you just
give some words?
Well, yeah, just fire right. One off.
Is there something in particular you'd like to hear, or
yeah, like the first poem you would read if you were asked to on the Watt from?
All right. Well, I'll read one that isn't from my new chapbook thing. It's pretty old, but it's still relevant today. It's one of my rare rhyming pieces. I usually don't rhyme. I do a lot of free verse and experimentation and whatnot. It's called The Situation Now. It's an economy of mass consumption in a culture of self-destruction. But all we want is an erection. I've got no time to think of the election. I'm too busy getting busy, want to rock out with my cock out. I don't want to have to think about anything important. And they know that. So they feed that. They prey upon our inconvenience and count upon our apathy. They say it's just coincidence and that we shouldn't worry. But the books are burning in the public school halls, and the cops aren't returning any of our frantic, foolish calls. They've left us defenseless, half naked, starved, and senseless. But that is the think tank consensus of how best to keep us free. Free to be exploited, cannon fodder for the anointed, soldier or serf, our only choices, as the big guns drown out our voices, so they can better hear the noises of those clinking champagne glasses, as the upper classes toast the unwashed masses for being such ignorant asses, just begging to be kicked.
Cool. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. Marvin Scott Marvin. Can we start at the beginning? Tell me, how old were you when you had your first poem experience?
I was 12, actually.
Where were you born?
I was born in North Dakota.
Where'd you grow up?
Anaheim.
Cali.
So yeah, Cali. Anaheim, California.
So you're 12 years old, what happened? Sixth grade?
Yeah, sixth grade, exactly, and I had already done all the reading assignments for the year and wasn't allowed to have any more extra credit for book reports, and I had been busted for selling book reports to other students. So during the reading period, I wasn't required to read their books. I'd already read them all, so I started working on writing a horror story, and I was writing down an outline, and the teacher came walking down the aisle and just grabbed it from me. What do we have here? And read it out to the class.
Yeah.
And she's like, oh, it's a poem. I'm like, that's not a poem. It's an outline for a story. And then there was a whole debate in the class about what made it poetry because it didn't rhyme.
So your first experience with poetry was actually writing some.
Yeah.
Up to that point, you hadn't read poets?
I had, but I wasn't into poetry.
No consequence.
It didn't really...
Somebody once told me poetry is everything that prose ain't. Because this idea of rhyming, I don't know, some guys latched onto it. Dante was pretty heavy on it. But then there was always this kind of blank thing.
Yeah.
Right? And I guess, song lyrics. Did you ever consider them like...
Oh, yeah. And
my poem.
A few years later, that's
after
where
the
I
was. Debate in class, yeah. What happened? Was like, wow, I'm going to start writing poems?
No, actually, I wasn't into it at all at that time. I was into H.P. Lovecraft and horror stories and stuff, you know. And years later, my brother had started writing poetry at that time, and a couple of years later I read some of his stuff, and that influenced me, and I started writing song lyrics, trying to start a band.
Ah, so there was connection between poems and lyrics.
Yeah.
And here's the poet laureate of Vermont, Sidney Lee. Let's hear one of his.
The skeletal Mr. Block flunked me in physics. He gathered some courage and told me I'd never tried. And what if I had? I'd still have been mystified. Something always goes wrong with me and numbers. The thing that stopped me dead in my tracks, for instance, on the north side slope of Checkerberry Knoll, at 3 o'clock today in January, Vermont, 2008, the thing I saw would all add up for one whose mind's behavior was different from mine. But I stood still and wondered. While the scurfy trunk of a half-dead sugar maple got struck somehow by the unobstructed sun and showed a shadow straight as string on the snow. I couldn't make it make sense. Bent tree, straight shadow. Would some equation explain it? Maybe, but not my thinking, which flew off any of it straight. To Block, as it happened, blackboard, chalk, cheap suit, oversized and wrinkled like animal skin. The haywire hair, an expression between pure rage and pain as our pack of brutish adolescents, all in a circle, dreaming up jibes so sharp we'd dream they drew blood, jeered the hopeless teacher. None of us wanted to grow up, Mr. Block. Neither did Block, I bet. So if when you talk to the young you grow lyric, you've never known a child or never been one. It takes a lifetime, it seems, to have a heart, to make certain things add up. I wondered whether the man still strode the earth. Cold snow chirped underfoot as I strode along in search of more legible signs. Dark blood and hair and frozen dung so the deer gave the neck just there. It was easy to figure the pack of coyotes circling the kill, the parts all dragged downhill and up. When I arrived, there was nothing else remaining besides that blood, the shit balls, the scattered hair clumps, the backbone, the hooves, the very hide, all missing.
Corrupt minds and confines. Yeah.
Flop from Pedro show. We just heard something new from Andrea Belfi. He's a Senor de Mayo drummer man, Brother Matt. He's got a solo album. And this is Ogeti Creano Forma. Before that, something new from Bars, Discharge. North 81. I think that stands for Interstate 81, Northeast Pennsylvania. I Am Someone, great tune. Chad and his brothers. And we start off with Sidney Lee doing Bet Tree Straight Shadow. What's your opinion of something like Poet Laureate? Man, Marvin Scott Marvin.
Oh, I don't know.
What about institutionalized arts, the idea that? Is it about the teacher grabbing your paper and misinterpreting it? Is that a problem? Institutional.
Well, I thought it was a problem at the time, but it's not now because it did influence me and it helped lead me down a different path, yeah.
And your brother. But you don't look for things like a validation through... I mean, did you go to school later to study poetry?
No. I have friends who've done that. I have friends who have...
But your thing is just take it on as your...
just do it.
Love.
You know, I approach it from the punk rock philosophy. Craft, do it.
Make it proper with pentameters and stuff.
Yeah.
No, I don't worry about form or anything. I'm more concerned about function than form. I'm more concerned about substance and style.
Few ones he has rhyming.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right, most of your poems?
Yeah, I don't do a lot of lyrical stuff.
I noticed in the book there wasn't a lot. You know?
There's a couple occasional rhymes in there, but...
Yeah, but it don't sound like it's being...
Not the point.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Wrapped around the screw, so to speak. So, your brother started doing it. How did you... Were you just writing them down on paper and then reading them to yourself or passing to a friend? Was there a point when you wanted to start reading like you did at the gig?
Right away. Well, I started writing lyrics in 85 or 86 when I was 15, 16. And I took a couple creative writing classes.
For a band, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
And
so they're meant to be sung.
Yeah, my early stuff was. And then I started realizing I want to write other things that I can't fit into a rhyme. I didn't know how to. And rhyming... Being forced into the rhyme scheme can be very limiting.
Yeah.
You know? So, branched out into writing free verse without even reading any, really. I hadn't encountered poets who really grabbed me until in my creative writing class, my teacher had read a piece and says, you know, wrote on it, reminds me of Bukowski. And I was like, who the fuck is Bukowski?
Yeah. I'd never heard of him before. His four last 14 years.
Oh, yeah. And
he's in that same boneyard with D-Boom.
A couple years later, my brother gave me a copy of Love is a Dog from Hell and said, here, read this. I was like, oh, okay, now I see the connection, now I understand. And that encouraged me more because I'm like, okay, well, if this guy is famous, well-known for just writing this kind of stuff about his own life like I'm doing,
Hey,
I can do it too. I'm on the right track. I'm not so bad.
Would you call your style confessional?
A lot of it is confessional, a lot of it's narrative, and like my new chapbook, some of it's more abstract, and it all depends. I do a lot of experimentation.
Let's hear another one right now. Stuff.
Okay. You want it? Why not? We'll start with opening up. If self-autopsy through poetry were easy, everyone would be doing it. Instead, we get love poems and lectures on the flavor of the moment. We dedicated cutters do it in private. Expose the inner workings in the places our garments conceal. We do it to feel something. Where we otherwise see only emptiness. We wish to change and modify ourselves. So we don't turn out like you. We want to make certain we are not hollow inside, and we want to be able to point out where we hurt and
watched the blood rise to the surface to show us we are still alive.
Yeah. So you remember the first time reading your stuff in front of people?
Yeah, it was 1993 in Las Vegas at Cafe Espresso Roma on Maryland, right across from UNLV, hosted by John Emmons. And it was my first time. I showed up, and the place was packed with people. And they had a list. I remember there's 36 numbers on the list, and the whole list was filled in except for the first seven. So I signed up number seven, thinking, you know, I didn't want to go first for my first time, but no one signed up one through six. So I had to read first for my first time.
Do you have any of those poems from those days?
Actually, The Situation Now, the first one I read.
Was read from, another one from those times.
Let's see. This would be from 1994, I think it was. I was working at McCarran Airport, and I'll just read it.
So you were living in Las Vegas at the time?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. This one's called TV Let Me Down. I was already down. Glad to be off work, but little else came to mind. Opened the door to my rented rooms, kicked off my boots, boiled water for ramen, broke open a beer can. Turned on the box, looking for laughs. Just a moment to take me away from this. Some comedian came on. He said, "I just saw the guy with the worst job in the world." That got my attention. I was ready. Come on, give it to me. Make me feel better. He said, "I was at the airport waiting for a flight." He then proceeded to describe what he observed out the terminal window. A man on the tarmac performing my job.
Yeah.
That's a true story.
Just the facts, man.
Yeah. It was a literally...
Can you remember when you wrote it?
Yeah.
Putting the words down?
Yeah.
Was it, do you go back? Do you redact? Do you edit?
Not much.
So the, what comes out with the flow is what...
Usually, yeah.
What we hear?
And I tend to write rather stream of consciousness. And
yeah.
I used to do, like, trance state kind of thing. And
automatic.
With or without drugs, mm-hmm. You know.
Brother Matt, we're at the end of the first hour.
Wow.
7/14/2014 Dishwalk Pedro Show with our guest Marvin Scott Marvin.
Right on.
Everybody's from behind the orange curtain.
Cool.
Hold tight for hour two. December 14, 2014 is the second hour of the Watt from Pedro Show.
Next to, of course, God, America, I love you, land of the pilgrims, and so forth. Oh, say, can you see by the dawn's early my country 'tis of? Centuries come and go and are no more, what of we should worry? In every language, even deaf and dumb, thy sons acclaim your glorious name. By gory, by jingo, by gee, by gosh, by gum. Why talk of beauty? What could be more beautiful than these heroic, happy dead who rushed like lions to the roaring slaughter? They did not stop to think, they died instead. Then shall the voice of liberty be mute. He spoke and drank rapidly a glass of water.
río Mapocho mueren los gatos y en el medio del agua tiran los sacos, pero en las poblaciones con la tormenta hombres, perros y gatos es la misma fiesta. Juega en medio de la tormenta, que es capitán de un buque que se dio vuelta. Me asustará yo si llega el caso, que mi negra no quiera darme un abrazo. Que fuera cierto que nos veamos un día en los elementos.
Bye.
Scott for Pedro show. On a Sunday, it's kind of quiet, Brother Matt.
Yeah, post-storm.
Maybe that's because it's in the morning. Usually we've got the dick extenders on motorcyclists who modify their vehicles with dick extenders. So, cannot be missed as they pass by. And it's, we had some big rains.
Yeah, big wind, big rain.
Big rains. Maybe Monday, tomorrow, and Tuesday. It's right here, not as big, but well, we need the rain, like everybody said. We start the second hour off with a poet named E.E. Cummins doing next to, of course, God, America, I. This was a cat who was into lowercase, by the way. Then some of the last Dirty Beaches ever, Pacific Ocean, Deeper Deep, Tears Are Running, Calma Rouse, Familia Miranda, Barcelona, and El Rio, Mapoto, Victor Jara, great cat. I think they shot him 23 times. Dirty War shit in Chile.
The other September 11th.
That was the same day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a bunch.
Not the same year, but the same day, yeah. Pantera Pura by Pythonizer, Double Cobra from Zai, and finally, the Orange Disaster original party theme by the Orange Disaster, which I think there's some Sao Paulo guys living in Hamburg. Getting back to poetry, Marvin Scott Martin, can you read us something from the new book?
Certainly.
Something that you did at the gig.
Okay.
By the way, the gig we're talking about, people, was Doll Hut. Yes, it's back open. Near where I-5 meets, Lincoln?
Disneyland.
Yeah. Lincoln Loop 5, exactly.
It's part of ours, kind of the end by the water. Well, you know, actually, it's tricky if you look on a map. Because everybody thinks, Orange County is going to be south of us. Mm. These you people are actually north of us. You're just way east and inland.
Mm. Yeah.
So look at a map, people. Don't get all prejudiced. Look at a map. It's not where you're from, it's where you're at. You know any of that shit.
All right. I'll read another narrative poem.
I'm waiting for you to get that happening again, Kurt.
Oh, yeah, digging it.
Because I thought that last Halloween gig was it. I'd never get to play there again. Mm.
Yeah.
It turned out to be Second Man again, too.
Yeah?
Great.
It was a great show.
It was. That was
bring
awesome.
Your weight.
All right. This is another work story. More recent. After living in Vegas so many years, I moved back to California and had to get a minimum wage job, get myself back on my feet during the Great Depression and
recession.
So this is a little narrative piece called Sharing the Wealth.
Yeah.
I watched the manager, half my age, counting out hot dogs, a total of 17, all waste. Tossed one at a time into a plastic garbage bag, already half full with popcorn. 17 hot dogs at $4.25 a pop, a write-off, calculated as just another cost of doing business. Waste is expected, has been factored into the business model, encouraged even. 17 hot dogs headed for the landfill. Maybe in another 100 million years, they would become crushed into oil for another oblivious generation of consumers. After the collapse, the rise. Civilization is like the tides, advancing and receding like clockwork. My work for the day was done. Simply standing and staring, waiting, as the manager counted hot dogs into the trash can. Also waiting. In expectation of my disposing of a feast into the proper receptacle of corporate policy expectations. Like a bartender's hand on the tap, as a head of foam threatens to exceed the boundaries of precise measurement, anticipating and calculating, there will be no spillover, no trickle down here. This is a closed loop. The only escape is through exchange, numbers for nourishment, a captive audience in their amusement, concessions for the affluent. I watched as the narrow yellow boxes, some with silver wrapping paper extended outside the confines like a glimpse of underwear, tumbled from the manager's hand, thinking, someone should eat those. All that effort, all that energy, all those resources, what a crime. To dispose of food while people are starving outside in the cold as winter threatens in the closing distance. As the counting completed, I pulled up the can liner, clear plastic showing a feast gone to waste, a shame, a disgrace. I carried the bounty of business excess to the industrial trash compactor, disgusted that I should obey an order to destroy something which could save lives. I made a decision to go the distance, to make up for the failing of my corporate masters. Instead of tossing the bag into the compactor, I fished out a clean cardboard box not crushed beyond usefulness and carefully placed those 17 hot dogs in neat rows. Then flung the remains, several pounds of popped corn, into the stinking machine, locked the door, and turned the key to wake the monster. As the hydraulics groaned and the cardboard and the popcorn and the plastics were crushed, I hid the box containing 17 hot dogs, still warm, in a dark corner behind the machine and went back inside to clock out. 10 minutes later, I was riding bicycle down Beach Boulevard in search of hungry mouths to feed with a cardboard box containing 17 hot dogs, still warm, balanced with one hand on the handlebars. I met four homeless drunks wandering the streets of Surf City after midnight and gave each of them two hot dogs. One of the drunks cried. It was the first solid food he had had to eat in 4 days, he said. God bless you, he said. And I replied, he already has. That's why I'm here. When I arrived at Pacific Coast Highway, there were several kids, teens and 20-somethings, sitting on the concrete steps beside the pier. Hey, I said, any of you guys hungry? They looked at me skeptically as they opened the box and held up a hot dog in its narrow yellow container with a bit of silver wrapping paper showing like Christmas had arrived early this year. I have some hot dogs if you want them. Really? Asked a brave young man, the first to step closer. Yeah, they're still good, even a little warm. His eyes lit up. What the hell? Where did you get these? He smiled as the others looked on a bit puzzled. From my work. Where's that? The theater at Bella Terra. You know where that is? He laughed. Yeah, yeah, damn, son. You rode all this way just to feed us? He turned to look at his companions, still smiling in surprise. Yes. The first brave soul grabbed his share and called the rest over. There were 9 total, but one girl refused to acknowledge our existence. She sat away from the group, staring at the ocean, stewing in her own juices, fuming about something. They called to her, but she ignored us. Another girl took the extra, saying she might want it later. The mood among the group perked up. They offered me a sip of vodka. I took a pull from the bottle. I had a small amount of marijuana. One of them had a bong in his backpack and some cocaine. We took cocoa puffs and watched the ocean beat the beach, passing the bottle and the bong, sharing a few laughs, and then I had to leave, as it was nearly 4, and I had to be back to work by 10 for my next shift. I knew I would be tired, even without the extra miles, but at least I wouldn't be hungry. And for a few hours, neither would these kids. Refugees from broken homes, sleeping in thin blankets and battered and soiled sleeping bags, indulging in drugs and booze to numb their weary souls, as the stars looked down in silence, as the ocean muttered something about it being just one night.
Yeah. Cool. Cheers.
Thank you.
Well, with that,
Got one some words.
Spare as am.
would go take them higher than that.
Due to weekend conditions, and although there's not too much smog, everything's jammed and it's worse than masts down in a storm, and you can't go anywhere, and if you do, they're all staring into glass and waiting for dinner. And no matter how bad it is, not the glass, the dinner, they'll spend more time talking about it than eating it. And that's why my wife got rid of me. I was a boor and didn't know when to smile or fake it, or rather worse, I did but didn't. And one afternoon with people diving into pools and playing cards and watching carefully shaven comedians in starched white shirts and fine neckties trying to be one of them, kidding about what the world had left them, I pretended a headache and they gave me the young lady's bedroom. She was about 17, and hell, I crawled beneath her sheets and pretended to sleep, but everybody knew I was a cornered fake. but I tried all sorts of tricks. I tried to think of Wilde behind his bars, but Wilde was dead. I tried to think of him shooting a lion or walking down Paris streets medallioned with his Wilde buddies, all the horrors, you know, swooning to their beautiful knees. But all I did was twist within her young sheets, and from the headboard, shaking in my nervous storm, several trinkets fell upon me. Elephants, glass dogs with seductive stares, a young boy and girl carrying a pail of water, but nothing by Bach or orchestrated by Ormandy, and I finally gave it up. Went into the john and tried to piss. I knew I'd be constipated for a week, and then I walked out. And my wife, a reader of Plato and E.E. Cummings, ran up and said, "Ooh, you should have seen Boo Boo at the pool. He turned backflips and side flips off one foot, and it was the funniest thing you've ever seen." I think it was not much later that the man came to our third floor apartment about 7 in the morning and handed me a summons for divorce, and I went back to bed with her and said, "Don't worry, it's all right," and she began to cry. I'm sorry. And I said, "Please stop. Remember your heart." But that morning when she left, about 8 o'clock, she looked the same as ever, maybe even better. I didn't even bother to shave. I called in sick and went down to the corner bar.
Thank you much, Brother Matt. What was behind your motivating inspiration?
Multiple illness, words.
Words.
For our guest, right. The word slinger that he is. Focus on getting some Hank in there, being a local boy, and speaking of local boys, had some local boys music in there, because the local boy up the street, Ron Froggy, he is gone now, so he's gone too soon, so had a little extra Pedro influence in there for him.
Very kind cat. I'm always going to remember Froggy, good man. Hey, we're at the end of the second hour. December 14, 2014 edition of Wild from Pedro Show, Brother Matt, our guest from the Orange Curtain. Hold tight for hour three. December 14, 2014, it's the third hour of Wild from Pedro Show.
Go. said it'd be fun. Keep my feet up. Jump sounds fine. Bass! Hear that sound. Bass! Hear that sound. Bass! Hear that sound. Bass!
Time when it was time to finish. He knew why he was walking, but not how to do the thing he called finish. Telos, telestes, ending things. It was something his mother had told him, then pretended she hadn't, whenever he asked about it later. His father always denied it without a word, just looked away out the window. What pale eyes a father has, how far away they see. How they never face anything that is here. Years ago, he had started walking to get away from the place his father refused to look at, him, there, wherever he was, and reach that other place that his father was looking at always. Reach that place and do something there. What was he supposed to do? Maybe he would know when he got there, build something, kill something, break something, say something. There are so few things we know how to do, really. From what his mother said, then denied, from what his father never said, but always watched, empty-hearted, far, he had tried to piece together instructions for his life. What should he do? What should anyone do? So he walked there, wherever it was that he would know by this fact alone, that he would stop there and go no further. Somehow, he knew he would know when to stop, or know that he had stopped, and notice only then, and it would be right. Meantime, everybody who looked away from him was looking there. He just had to follow their empty glances, their embarrassed or irritated lookings away, and he would know the way. And somehow his body would know when to stop. Then he knew he would take something out of his pocket and use it. Or else pick something off the ground, right there on the street, or on the beach, and use it. And he would know how to use this thing, and what other thing or things to use with it, and what rhythm to use in playing one thing against the other. He would know the words to say. He is sure that at that moment, he will listen to the inside of his head and hear some words, and all he'll have to do is say them out loud, and it will be done.
Out in the Texas whirlwind, where the robbers tied, we did the grapevine twist on a one-night stand. Square pegs in a round world, when it all comes down, nowhere else to go. Fire down below, she had graveyard eyes. Twisted sheets and irrational fears. She had a bleeding heart and soft money to blow. Nowhere else to go. Fire down below. Yeah. have to go. Fire down below.
City.
from Pedro Show. Start off the third hour with Bass Hear That Sound. Rough mix from Pork Chops and Applesauce. And poet Robert Kelly with The Ritual. In his own words, Waco Brothers. Had to play some more after last
week. Yeah, weekend. Yeah, it's cool.
Yeah, Brother John Langford.
Very cool.
Righteous having him aboard and hearing his story. Fire Down Below, Waco Brothers. Then a brand new album from El May, Lessons Appear. We got to have her back on. Waco Brothers with Paul Birch with Give In, and finally Tobacco with Blow Your Heart. Great album. That Ultima thing he had for this year. Put out himself. Music to start off the third hour here, Brother Matt, was a band called Pork Chops and Applesauce.
Yeah.
Mr. Pork Chops and Applesauce himself. Brother Kurt.
Hey.
One half, or?
Thanks,
I don't know, when last week at the gig, you were with the drummer. What's his name?
Ron. Applesauce.
Yeah, Applesauce. You're Pork Chops. Yeah. One word, not two words.
No, I'm Pork Chops and Applesauce, but anybody that joins me is just another Applesauce. So,
so when you guys got here earlier, we were talking about the All Hut, and I didn't realize that you were one of the main men making it happen.
I'm just a good friend of the owner, and I'm there helping out, and I do construction, so anything breaks.
Well, the cat, part
of the team.
Part of the team.
Yeah.
Making beer flow.
And why the applesauce guy couldn't come?
Oh, applesauce is always rotating. So, okay.
This one I saw. Who was he, Rick?
Ron. Ron. And Ron Ring, and great drummer. You'd know him from the band. He was a drummer for DMF.
Oh, yeah, Johnny.
Yeah, Johnny's band. And good guy.
Yeah, that's right. I saw him there before. In fact, shared that same. Well, it ain't the same stage. There is a stage now.
Yeah.
It's kind of a. Small, though.
It is small.
Hard for us to get our organ up there. We did it, though.
You guys fit it well. You're a little Tetris.
Yeah, a little Tetris. explain to people what Applesauce and Pork Chops is about.
Pork Chops and Applesauce is me playing bass and singing and anything I feel like doing.
When did it start?
About 10 years ago. And started just...
What do you call that? Millennial?
It's a
millennial band?
It's a millennial band, yeah. I guess it was.
Aughts?
Yeah.
It's from the aughts?
But yeah, it's the double aught.
Never said that aught. Yeah, with shotguns.
And I started playing with the drummer, and the guitarist didn't show up one day for first rehearsal, and I said, you know what? I think we're a two-piece now. And
you got the scissors.
Yeah, got scissors, and... called about getting a gig and got a gig for that first night, and it hasn't stopped since. So I've been really lucky.
Wow. Was it your first band?
No, I've been in a zillion bands. Always a bass player, like, you know, with a singer-songwriter guy, and, you know, which has been great.
Always Orange County?
Always Orange County. Always, been privileged to play with lots of great musicians.
Anaheim?
Anaheim, yeah.
German for our home.
Yes, that's right.
Because there was German farmers in the old days. Yes. People don't realize if you go there now, strip malls and track homes, but this was actually a huge agriculture area. This part, too.
Mm-hmm.
Lawndale was the celery capital, you know.
Yeah, I remember just rows, driving down the freeway, just rows of farms.
Beverly Hills was bean fields.
Yeah.
I mean, the whole SoCal was...
Sugar beets.
Yeah. And hence the name Orange County.
Yeah.
So I think the first one actually was Florida. It's where it's where Orlando is and shit, because you'll see it on the license plate, and it's like, what?
Yeah.
There's a Hollywood there, too.
Yeah.
It's just north of, it's up down there by Miami.
I've driven through it.
It's by, maybe it's just south of Fort Lauderdale. But it's over there. And one time, me and D. Boone were wrestling outside a bank, and, you know, I had army clothes on from a tour. He wanted me to wear a beard and army clothes. And the bank got scared and called the hombres, and they came there, and... You know, what's this about, you know, and, just having a little disagreement about history or something. And, officers, where are you from, Hollywood? And, like, you know, over here, you would hear that in the old days, you know, the old punk scene, right, the Hollywood, all that. And I just didn't realize that they actually have their own Hollywood. I just, like, laughed. And that dude got pissed. You laugh at the man with the... gun in the badge. But he didn't understand for me to hear that in that moment. No. It was a weird juxtaposition situation. Okay, and you're recording an album.
Yeah.
Is this the first Porkchop and Applesauce album?
I did an EP 6 or 7 years ago. And
this is round two?
Round two, and been lucky to play with some good players, and got a good drummer for that. And
but it ain't Ron Ring.
It ain't Ron Ring this time. It's I moved on. Well, I'm up for playing with any drummer. Any drummer that's sitting behind me is, in my opinion, the best drummer in the world. So if somebody wants to join me up there, I'm...
But they got
to
be behind you.
Got to be behind me, yeah, okay. Of course.
Here's some more.
Show me.
your best love song. I will share my secret, share my fears. No more right and wrong now.
Yeah. 1760. They had buried a dragonfly with false clearness. A punishment with me on the icebergs rather than the raped. But now I see it as a dragonfly. When before it was a preference of only being in solitary confinement. Always the losses. With the dotted attacks. But it goes on.
Black for Pedro show. Last music for this edition. Yeah, from Charleston, Charlietown, Scummy Elam Bolt, Noma Dear Blanca, and from up in Canada, Happy, Kings of Lower Town. That's
Keith Richards. Digging that Kings of Lower Town's cool.
Keith Richards. Yeah, news, what did I hear? Marco just left Rewild. He's starting a band. He's going to stay in London, but play with some England guys. Good luck. Easily entertained, Rough Mix Edit from the Blueprint Conspiracy. David Gerard there out of Boston. Some buddies. Ron Huddy with the Deflation Situation. Tunnel Rat, Stick with a crossed out peace sign. And finally, For a Little While by Broke Dick Dog. Broke Dick Dog was a one song only band, Money Mark Nishida.
Mm-hmm. Steve Perkins. Yeah, how's old Money Mark these days? Right.
And it's a tribute. This is one of those songs Jim Brown would put on his albums in the older days where he'd like just play the organ and shit, you know, to hug the label. I guess I wouldn't call it filler, but somebody else might. I thought it was righteous, and we did that in order. I think it was his 65th birthday, 1998 or 99.
Cool.
Yeah, we did it in Orange County. This was closer to the water, maybe Huntington. HB. It's called Distillery.
I've heard of that.
You know, the studio, yeah. Like a lot of tube stuff, yeah. Oldie type. Cat named Mike there. And, anyway, Mr. Brown, because that dude was wild. That dude was wild. I think everybody owes him a little something. Well, at least in spirit.
Yeah.
I'd like to hear another poem out of you, Marvin Scott Marvin.
All right.
Would you please, Brandon?
Certainly. Checking in. Fantasy creeps and dream invaders trade in vibrational currency. Sealed up in shells under extreme pressure and rolling an irritant into a pearl. An artist knows to be patient. Stalk inspiration as prey animal. Tracks not seen in many miles of searching. The audience wanders off, tired of waiting for the wheatgrass kid to ride again. Only the faithful remain, lighting candles in devotion to Saint Fritz of the perpetual head wound. He knows, somehow he knows when it happens. She snaps, her own picture in a dirty bathroom mirror, no smile on lips drawn tight, as if to say, no man's hands ever felt like daddy's. Sometimes we catch the devil on laundry day, discover a time warp in the central stairwell, somewhere between the fifth and sixth floors. Stare at the ceiling, when it sounds like light rain or goblins dancing on the roof. Expect a snake to climb out of the sink to answer the phone. Tell the bill collectors no one lives here. A small technical truth. There's always another checking the mail.
Cool. Yeah.
Can we wind back the clock a little bit? Because we got you your first reading ever in Las Vegas. And that guy, you were number 7 on the 50 list. Is it 50 or 35?
It was like 36.
36. After that, what? You started doing more live readings?
Yeah, I kept coming back every week.
It was the same pad.
Yeah.
So there was like kind of a poem scene in Las Vegas?
Yeah.
And what were you telling Brother Matt? What was that called?
The Slams.
Slams?
Oh, the poetry slam stuff, yeah.
Is that what this kind of scene was?
Not initially, no. That was a different movement that came along through the poetry scene.
How would you say it's different?
Well, slam is a competitive thing where you have a specific time limit,
yeah.
And you have judges who are supposed to judge your poetry half on performance and half on content. And
you mean the way you deliver it?
Yeah.
And then what you got to deliver.
Yeah.
And why is it called slam?
Because you're competing against other people.
Oh, another kind of poetry is man alone. Every work stands on itself. This is like you actually put them up against each other.
Yeah.
And it's just judges. A couple judges?
Five judges. Okay.
And they don't go by audience.
You throw out the top score and the low score.
Okay.
And you take the three middle scores and add them together.
Yeah.
And if you get, you know, the ultimate is the perfect 30. Yeah.
Okay.
So do you have many chapbooks?
Yeah.
Yeah, when did that happen? When did you go out of, or did you continue to do, you said for like 8 years you wouldn't read anymore. Is this when you were putting out the...
My first chapbook, I didn't put out until 2006.
Okay.
And then I put another one out in 2007, and then this one is my third, which I just put out a couple weeks ago.
Right. And that slam stuff, that was in the 90s in Las Vegas.
When I first encountered it, yes.
It still happening, though, huh?
When I quit doing poetry readings for about 8 years.
Yeah.
And when I came back into it, met a bunch of friends that I knew from back then who were into the slam thing. So it's not really my thing, but other people really enjoy it. And I helped out by participating in whatever means was necessary, whether it was to be a performer or a judge, because they need so many people to participate in order for it to be legal under this whole structure that they have to get to the nationals.
It's a big competition.
Yeah, it's a...
Wow.
And I'm not too into that kind of organization art and
I didn't whatever, know that.
So, yeah.
It almost sounds like sports.
Yeah, it is. It's competitive poetry. It is. Okay. It's turning it into a sport, yeah. And,
trippy. Because poetry seems like such a man alone... a kind of form of expression.
Yeah.
And well, playing to the crowd or playing to the judges, that's true.
Yeah, so many ways of expressing.
Yeah.
Yeah, my problem's always been the time limit, because they give you 3 minutes, and then you got a 10-second grace period, and then after that you start getting a time penalty.
Okay.
And so one time... one time I did compete in a slam, and I intentionally read an extra long piece where I got it was like a 26 and a half point time penalty.
So you went in the hole?
Yeah.
But probably your future isn't slam poems. You'd like regular poetry.
I could do it, I suppose.
Here I ask everybody, especially music people, but I ask this about poems. If some young poet wanted to start getting into that singing racket, what advice would you give?
Oh, I'd advise them to tell their own real stories and wave their hands and stomp a lot and memorize it so you don't have, you know. That's one factor that's... hindered my performance in slam was that I would read a lot off the page.
Uh-huh. Not just slam, but any kind of poetry.
Oh, for any kind of poetry.
Yeah, what kind of advice would you give? Still with the life stories, right?
That's difficult to say, because there's so many different kinds of poetry. You know, I don't want to tell people to do what I do, because they might enjoy those older forms, you know. Some people really do enjoy that, and enjoy slam.
That's a form of advice.
Yeah.
So thank you about that. So you hear that, people. Get into what you get into.
Yeah.
Because you might like it.
If you like poetry for
you might not like other
old forms, it's great. Right. if, you know, I try to do tailor some of my reading to an audience that, actually doesn't like poetry, or, you know, I don't necessarily write for people who like poetry. Sometimes, you know, I write for myself, and I write and perform for people who hate poetry and go, oh, wait a minute, poetry's not what I thought it was.
Oh, so like you kind of changed minds.
Yeah.
That's
hopefully.
That's a noble goal, what you think, brother man.
Yeah, I think just slipping in on, turning them on to something they don't know they like. Yeah.
I really want to thank you for coming over.
Nice to meet you so much, Grayson. Very cool.
We love Grotto here and our wonderful Pedro show, Brother Matt's. Very, very honored to have you aboard. Kurt, thanks for toting him over.
Yeah, no problem, man. It was a pleasure. It sounded great, Marvin.
And and good luck with the pork chop round.
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah.
Mark, Brent Chuckin.
Yeah.
Thanks for having me here. It's awesome.
Okay. It's so the December 14th, 2014 edition of Waffle Peter Show. Everybody, probably next time I talk to you, I'll be seven-year-old.
So Deep Piazza's party.
Happy birthday. Yeah.
Listen, a week from yesterday. Keep your powder dry.
Yeah.